Just a few minutes before we were to meet, I was told the subjects of this session were Elaine and Joe Stilwell. It was a nice surprise, since I hadn't seen them for a few years. It would be nice to get caught up, I thought. As I stood to go to the conference room door to greet them in advance of their arrival, my thoughts immediately went to the chairs, comfy, swiveling leather armchairs that I can and have sat in for hours. I knew Elaine and Joe would get a kick out of the chairs. Many things had changed over the many years since I started working in earnest out of my house in Deer Park, Long Island, after taking a chance and leaving my job as an operator at the New York Telephone Company, including the furnishings. More than 30 years ago, Elaine and Joe had come to a small group session held in my home. Money was tight, so things were as basic as you could get. The room in which I held sessions was unfurnished, except for a framed print of a schooner, which the home's previous owners had left hanging in order to avoid having to repaint the wall that had faded around it, a table lamp that gave off a hideous glare, and the beat-up armchair in which I sat. My clients sat on borrowed folding chairs, sometimes for hours, to hear from their loved ones and to reconnect with the souls they had lost. The leather chairs were certainly an upgrade. At our first meeting more than 30 years ago, I realized I already knew Elaine and Joe without ever having met them before. I remembered reading in the paper about a terrible accident in which 2 young people, a brother and sister, lost their lives. They were driving back from a concert at the Jones Beach Theater when they attempted to cross a small drawbridge. They must not have realized that the single flashing light on that darkened road meant the bridge was on its way up. Their car hit the rising portion of the bridge, killing one sibling. The other, who was critically injured, died 4 days later at the hospital. The story resonated with me because I knew the area where they were killed. During the day, it's a beautiful, sun-soaked drive through dunes and gorgeous water views. But at night, that beautiful ride becomes a daunting labyrinth of dark stretches and sudden turns on a poorly lit highway. It always surprised me that more people didn't meet tragedy driving through that desolate area at night. The siblings were Elaine's children from her first marriage. The souls identified themselves in the session as Dennis and Margaret, a formal name the young lady quickly changed to Peggy. They talked about their closeness and an unusually deep friendship for sister and brother. They insisted that although the bridge was poorly lit and the drawbridge signal nearly impossible to see, the accident was nobody's fault. But then Dennis, the older of the two, said something extraordinary that made me sit up straight in my chair. He told us that Peggy had died instantly in the crash, but he had lingered. He explained that while he was in a coma, Peggy came to tell him that she had passed on, that she was going ahead of him to the hereafter. Dennis, fearing not only that he could never live with the pain of losing his sister, but also that he would have to bear the responsibility for her passing, decided that he wanted to go with her. After clinging to life for 3 days, Dennis passed, following his sister into a world of joy. I was young at the time, still in my 30s, and it was the first time in hundreds of sessions that any of the souls had dared to tell me they had a choice, to stay on the earth or go on to the hereafter. It took me a second to comprehend what was being said. Although the souls had told me many times that there is a day and an hour we will pass on, sometimes it is possible to rewrite the script, to bend the rules, to literally change what I had been taught by the souls was a one-way ride. In the past, the souls had been very resolute on this point. We live, we pass on, we continue forward to the hereafter on a specific day and at a specific time. It all seemed so tidy. But this new information generated more questions than it answered, especially for me. Is fixing what dumb luck seems to have broken something the souls are able to do? What about the life journey? Wasn't that plan etched into us even before we were born? It was simple, Dennis told me. They weren't rewriting their lives. They were just moving the goalposts a little to bring each other peace, while also still providing the life lesson for those left on the earth. I almost thought this information would be too much for Elaine to bear. I thought she would cry out at the injustice of losing two children simply because it was an easier road for Dennis to walk. I looked into her soft eyes, and all I saw was peace. She knew. As a mother, she knew it had been as it had had to be. She told me afterward that that was Dennis's way, and that, although it was painful to know his life could have been spared, she understood his decision to go on with his sister, and loved him all the more for it. So I had found out that choice is a wild card, and circumstance is apparently movable when the souls need it to be. This was news to me, and a bit of a wrinkle in my thoughts. The souls had usually been straightforward when it came to why we live, why we die, and what we are to learn in both circumstances. But this became one of several asterisks in their narrative, a new concept, that the souls, due to our needs or theirs, can change the journey for us here or change the resolution for us in the hereafter, simply because there is a greater good at stake. It was a real learning experience for me as well as for the Stillwells, and something that has helped bond us as friends for many years.